Earlier this year, in testimony before the U.S. Senate's Special Committee on Aging, a top official from Immigration and Customs Enforcement unveiled an investigation called Operation Cocoon. U.S. agencies, working with their foreign counterparts, intercepted 144 drug couriers carrying methamphetamine, cocaine, ecstasy, and heroin across international borders. 83 of the couriers are U.S. citizens. But what's interesting is that the average age of these couriers was 59, and the oldest courier was 87 years old. Most of the older couriers are believed by U.S. officials to have been unwitting, that is, recruited by criminal organizations using a variety of con schemes. Investigators say that more than 30 of these older individuals are still imprisoned overseas. How did it happen? I spoke with Sarah Rodriguez, a spokesperson for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, to get the answers. Walk us through Operation Cocoon, if you will. How did federal investigators become aware that criminal organizations were recruiting senior citizens to smuggle drugs? And what did investigators do when they found out?
First, our counterparts at Customs and Border Protection actually deserve a hat tip here. They came to our investigators with some patterns in data. In analyzing the data, they realized they were seeing a lot of older U.S. citizens who'd never traveled outside of the country before who weren't returning, and that kind of sparked an interest in what's happening to them. And so we contacted foreign law enforcement partners abroad in the countries where, you know, these itineraries ended, and that's when we found out, they were arrested. They were arrested on drug charges. They had drugs on their person, and they were all concealed at the time of the arrest in different ways, and the majority of them, you know, our law enforcement partners were telling us, and they all kind of seemed to not know what was going on and to be very surprised. And so that's kind of when we got involved and did some investigations and realized and identified the criminal organization behind this scheme. And we were able to work with some of our partners in places like Australia and New Zealand to have people released, but other countries have stricter laws. And so that's why there are those about 30 U.S. citizens still incarcerated abroad.
Tell our listeners how the international drug smuggling worked from the perspective of the older courier. What happened?
In general, an individual would receive a phone call, and it would either be an inheritance promise of, you know, you had a relative in a foreign country who passed away and they've left you an inheritance. And the requirement is that you have to sign for the funds in person. And part of the inheritance is funding your travel all this way. So you don't have to put out anything of your own pocket. And that's how you know this isn't a scam. People were presented with investment opportunities that were false. And again, they said the investment group is willing to front the money. And that's where this scam differs from a lot of other scams. These individuals weren't asked for money up front, and therefore they thought it was legitimate. And so, for example, we had a 74-year-old Vietnam veteran who was arrested in New Zealand with 6.2 kilos of methamphetamine. He was released after about a year of being incarcerated abroad, and he had been approached with an investment scam because he was someone who invested in businesses. These scammers do a lot of research about their targets before they reach out so that they know exactly how to make you believe what they're saying. They know anything that could be found about you online. Think Facebook. Think what your family posts about you if you don't personally have a Facebook. There's a lot of information out there in the world, and these scammers are wily and they go after it. But we have other examples where we have explained to people, this is a scam, and we've identified, you know, you are being contacted by these people, and they are not what they are portraying themselves to be, and they're still going along with it because at that point, those scammers have a strong relationship with them.
It occurs to me that the drugs must be hidden somewhere. How does that happen?
The drugs were hidden in ways that were innocuous to the average consumer. Anything from canned goods to shampoo bottles to soap, even wooden hangers inside of chocolates, picture frames. And what we heard from a lot of victims who were returned, it was usually a token to take on to another business associate. Oh, it is the attorney you're meeting, it's his wife's birthday next week, and you can only get these chocolates in London. So would you please take this to her for me? I mean, what grandmother do you know that's going to say, no, I don't know you, I'm not taking these chocolates. But lo and behold, the chocolates had methamphetamine in them.
Why is it that senior citizens are recruited as drug mules?
This is not a typical drug smuggling profile. And in fact, we have found that this organization has now strayed away from using senior citizens for this scam and are using younger non-U.S. citizens for it because we blew their cover, frankly. But also they're recruited because they're easily duped on the phone. A lot of these individuals are in the beginning stages of dementia, or they're lonely and they want a friend. And they become friends with these individuals who are nice to them, who call them regularly, who catch up on their lives with them, and who also happen to be offering an inheritance or offering an investment opportunity. And maybe you miss what your old life was when you were younger and you were still active in a business community of some kind. And so that's an example of these smugglers taking advantage of specific vulnerabilities that senior citizens have.
Of the senior citizens that were caught in Operation Cocoon, is it fair to assume that some of these people were not innocent?
I would definitely say that's a fair assumption. Our investigators say that's a fair assumption. We aren't able to interview individuals who are incarcerated abroad. Those are not jails that are opened up to us so that we can verify. But based on patterns that we've looked at and based on the individuals who have returned home, we are comfortable saying that a good number of them likely had no idea what they were doing.
Those 30-some-odd, and that's just a guesstimate, I understand from you, who are still imprisoned overseas, what's going to happen to them?
In a lot of these countries, there are no exceptions when it comes to drug crimes. The reason that these individuals were sent to these countries is because drugs are incredibly, incredibly valuable on the street. And so to get even a little bit, even the fewest kilos that these individuals were caught with, it's a big payoff for these criminal organizations. And that means that these are the countries with the most draconian prison laws when it comes to drugs. It doesn't matter if they knew what they were doing. In all likelihood, their case does not look different to foreign officials because of the way their laws are written.
Thanks very much, Sarah Rodriguez with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Tune in tomorrow for part two of our report on senior victims of international drug schemes. For KSFR, I'm Mary Lou Cooper. I spoke with 77-year-old Pastor Brian Martin at his son's home in Nevada. Mr. Martin was recently released from a Spanish prison for possession of cocaine worth almost $500,000. His story is a sad variation on an internet romance scam. After an online romance lasting 5 or 6 years, a woman, who called herself Joy, asked Pastor Martin to travel to South America to pick up some real estate papers and then deliver them to her in London. While in South America, Martin received 2 sealed packages, which he placed in his carry-on luggage. At a connecting airport in Spain, en route to London, he was stopped by security. Pastor Martin served almost a year in a Spanish prison before his release. His family credits Maine Senator Susan Collins and the State Department for his liberation. Pastor Martin, thank you for joining us today on KSFR Public Radio Santa Fe. First, let me say how pleased we are that your long ordeal has come to an end.
My pleasure.
Other older Americans were victimized by international drug organizations, so you're certainly not alone in falling for these schemes. Can you tell us what led you to believe Joy when she asked you to bring the papers from South America that turned out to actually be drugs?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that I have been communicating with her for at least 5 years. Drugs in any form or format was never mentioned, and so I had no reason to suspect drugs after that long a time. We shared a lot of, I guess you call it, personal information with each other, and I would go back and use that to kind of test to make sure I was talking to the same person because I wanted to be a little bit careful.
Had you sent Joy money earlier in that relationship?
Yes, but a lot less than what anybody else has assumed.
What has happened to you as a result of this devastating experience? Am I correct that you lost pretty much everything?
Yes, I think that's a fair statement. I lost the home I was living in. I lost the car I was using. I lost the lady I was married to. Worst of all, I think, is my own self-respect because I feel terrible for being taken.
Do you have anything else about your story that you think our listeners would be interested in?
I think the thing that's always impressed me the most is that it took them 5 years to do anything. I mean, that is a lot of patience. And I was completely taken in, but there was never any hint of wrongdoing on her part or expected me to do any.
So in other words, she strung you along for 5 years before the ask was made regarding the drug courier.
That is true. Her parents had owned extensive real estate in Quito, Ecuador, and they had died. She received it all, but she was unable to travel herself and asked if I would go pick them up and deliver to her attorney in London.
And before you got to London, you landed in Spain at a connecting flight?
Yes, they routed me through Spain and then to Dublin, Ireland, which I didn't go to, obviously, and then to London, and then I'd be free to come home.
Anything else you'd like to add to your story?
The issue with me is the fact that I've been a pastor, and I depend a lot on trust. I trust other people unless I have obvious reason not to, and so to live in a world where there's no trust is hard, and that's why it was easy for me to be taken in, I suppose. So I have to be more or less trusting in the future in other situations. I'm never going to do this one again. I do want to say I'm glad I was caught because I do not want those drugs on the street.
KSFR next listened in on testimony before the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. Some months ago, the committee exposed efforts by transnational drug organizations to turn unsuspecting senior citizens into drug mules. 79-year-old retired contractor Daniel Seibert was one of the luckier victims in that he was stopped in Atlanta by U.S. Customs before the overseas leg of his trip could take place. For Seibert, the cheese in the mousetrap was the promise of a free trip to Dubai by way of Japan. Here's what Seibert had to say.
I was supposed to go to UK, pick up some kind of a package, from there go to Dubai, and then from Dubai I was supposed to go to Japan. But I didn't think anything about it. I said, well, I'd never been to Dubai, so I wanted to go. Well, then they stopped me, and then they explained what was going on.
Seibert believed the package he was to carry while overseas was a harmless gift, not a drug packet.
He called me on the phone, is what it was, and said I had to go to the UK to pick up a package which I was going to take with me all the way to Japan. And I asked him about, well, what's in the package. He said, thing like, it's a thank you package I'm supposed to give to some banker in Japan. In Japan, it's very customary. You give people presents.
Like many internet scam victims, his recruitment as a drug courier was not the first or the last time Daniel Seibert would be deceived.
Over the last 6 years, I probably sent about 150,000. I get about 400 emails a day. I would guess that 300 of them want money.
We conclude our two-part report on unwitting older drug couriers with tips on how to avoid getting caught up in these scams. If families notice what appear to be unusual trips or transactions by older relatives, they should talk about these events with their loved ones. Don't carry packages from people you don't know when you're traveling. If you've been victimized by a scam previously, be aware that it's very likely that scammers will target you again or sell your name to other con artists. Be wary of anyone you don't know who wants you to send them money. Also be wary of someone who wants to send you free money. Watch out for windfalls or overly generous investment opportunities. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Finally, when in doubt, just hang up or delete that email. For KSFR, I'm Mary Lou Cooper.